Friday, April the 29th, 1983, 3 o'clock p.m., Hearing Room B, Senate Committee on Energy and Environment. Work session and hearing on Senate Bill 237 as amended. Testimony limited to issues of attorney's fees, hearings officers standing, minor partitions, and vacation of old partitions.
We're continuing our public hearing on Senate Bill 237, and today we are focusing on the sections that deal with the attorney's fees, the hearings officers standing, and the minor partitions and vacation of old partitions. I'd like to have who else was there? Is Cliff Kanegi here today? He's one of the people who didn't get pissed by last time. I want to give him an opportunity.
He may be arriving later. He was still farming.
Okay, why don't Lois and Hector, Lois Kanegi and Hector McPherson come up first.
Look, it's not Tennessee.
Okay. I'm Hector McPherson, a farmer from Green County, and speaking for Ag for Oregon.
And I'm Lois Kanegi, also speaking from Corvallis, Oregon, also speaking for Agriculture for Oregon.
Before we get into today's testimony, I wanted to make just a comment or two. Senator Roberts asked at the last hearing that I find out whether there was a definition for a temporary dwelling, and I find there is not, and so today I will be proposing a definition for a temporary dwelling. Senator Hood is not here, so I can't comment on what he thought the problem was with the Hood River County. I can assure you, however, that the senator that represents that area will be hearing from Ag Oregon representatives from that area on that issue. Now, the other thing that I simply couldn't pass up from the last one is that Mr. Marvin Glowers, the planning director from Linn County, was saying that he thought that our definitions continuing the size appropriate for continuing the agriculture of the area was inappropriate. And of course, I think it was already pointed out that this is a part of the goal, and therefore, if it is, it's already a problem. But I wanted to point out what actually happens with new crops, because I think we have a situation here where there is plenty of opportunity out there to bring a new crop along without cutting up the larger holdings that we already have. As a matter of fact, I think you received a lot of testimony last night showing the number of small lots there are throughout the Willamette Valley, that each of which could be used for a new crop. But from a farmer's standpoint, what really happens out here with these new crops that come along, and of course there are a couple that are coming along right now, one of them is sorghum, and the other is meadowfoam. What happens is that a farmer puts a small part of the area of his farm into a new crop because he doesn't want to gamble everything on that. And of course, if that becomes an economic success, and then that is expanded. So that is the route that's generally used for new crops, and it's a part of an existing parcel. It isn't a matter of somebody wanting to go into the area and say, well, gee, I'm going to grow meadowfoam and want to put a house on it. The problem you get into if you allow that kind of thing is that we get in, I think, two crops that have come along here that that are not appropriate until they might think they could. But one of them is angleworms, which I'm sure you've seen the ads if you've read any farm publications for how you get into the angleworm business, and want to have 5 acres to grow angleworms on as a commercial crop. Another one is comfrey, one of those things that most farmers do not think is appropriate. So anyway, those, I wanted to bring that out because I don't think that the language that we have in our test there is inappropriate at all, nor would it lock Linn County into growing ryegrass if there were something else that were more profitable. Now on to what we're discussing today, and we're going to divide, Lois and I are going to divide speaking on the different issues, but I'll take up the one on attorney's fees first. Senator Starkovich has been extremely interested in how we're going to improve the enforcement. Our committee has worked hard on this, and unfortunately we haven't come up with very many good solutions, but I think a number of the things we're suggesting today will help in the enforcement of the, what has been state law for nearly 10 years now. And this is one of the areas where we think it's, that we can step up the enforcement. In existing law, we already provide that an individual in the EFUU zone can help the county enforce it, but he's got to hire a lawyer and go in and fight the case, and there's no way he's going to get his money back. And so people simply aren't responding to that. And we thought the thing perhaps that would improve the enforcement on this matter of dwellings in the EFU zone, and I should give you, perhaps before I go into my explanation what it is, we have a change in the, and, that's, and you're receiving that now. It's a substitution only of temporary dwelling for the mobile homes that I think we discussed before. I could read that in a judicial proceeding authorized by this section. The court shall allow a plaintiff reasonable attorney's fees and expenses if the court finds that a temporary dwelling, and that's new, established under paragraph A of subsection 2 of section 5 of this 1983 Act, or a dwelling approved to relieve a temporary hardship, is being used in violation of an ordinance or conditions issued by the county governing body or its designate. The fees and costs shall be paid by the county, which shall have the right to recover from the defendant. Below that, we find the definition for a temporary dwelling, and we have defined that for the purposes of this section, a temporary dwelling is a dwelling with no permanent foundation. Lois?
I'd like to call your attention also on page 5 of the bill, line 11. Our original language there was a dwelling customarily provided in conjunction with farm use, as was pointed out in some of testimony from other groups. And as we looked at that after originally drafted, we realized that that might be construed quite broadly and perhaps was not conservative enough. And so in the proposed new language that you have received limits that kind of attorney's fees recovery and enforcement possibility to the temporary hardship, temporary dwellings, and also the temporary dwellings which we are recommending in this act, which would be permitted on small parcels, small farm parcels that were smaller than the ordinary lot size or the ordinary farm commercial farm unit, as specified on page 6, lines 4 to 9 there.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir, start it.
Would the, suppose the plaintiff loses, would the defendant be entitled to attorney's fees?
Not under the language we suggested. I think we would not be opposed if the committee thought that was fair, but the thing you get into is that we don't think that very many of the people that are going to challenge this are going to lose. But if they could, you know, I think it may look to be fair. But here we have a case where somebody is out there blatantly, you know, violating the law. And so it's got to be the other person that that really receives the redress in this and gets the advantage of the attorney's fees. But certainly, I think our group would not be opposed to making it prevailing party if this committee thought it was more appropriate.
My concern would be that if reciprocal attorney fees were not in there for the defendant, that there may be less. Well, I won't say less seriousness given to the action by the plaintiff, but they might feel that it would just be easier for them to go in, that they had nothing to lose by going in. And you know, we've heard complaints that this is a bill that is going to allow existing farmers, large farmers, the opportunity to gobble up little farms. And I would feel more comfortable, at least with regard to that issue, if reciprocal attorney fees were in there for the defendants. So.
Our group would not oppose that.
Okay.
Should we go to Commerce panel?
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, yes.
I'm doing Commerce. Okay, if you turn to page... Excuse me. Page 8.
Seven.
In section 7. I'd like to have you look at a number of new items on page 8 in section 7, beginning with lines 14 to 17. We're suggesting that each county be required to appoint a panel of 3 or 5 full-time commercial farm operators selected from a list of qualified farm operators prepared by the Agriculture Extension Agent, and this panel would serve as a hearings officer. We think if the Agriculture Extension Agent would be proposing such a list, that list would include a variety of kinds of farming operations, small and large, and from a variety of kinds of crops, so that the county board that would make those appointments would have a broad range to choose from. Now, there's a lot of merit to the whole concept of a hearings officer, particularly if you go down on line 25 and 26. We're also proposing that in relationship to permits on exclusive farm use land, permits involving land in an exclusive farm use zone, the decision of this hearings officer panel would be the final determination of the county. One of the beauty, part of the beauty of this approach is that you remove the political pressure, you remove the heat from the county board itself. Part of the dilemma of enforcement of land use laws is that we are asking our county commissioners to be both legislative in their actions and also judicial and enforcing. And we're suggesting that a farmers panel could be a hearings officer, but at no expense to the county, because they would not be paying the wages of a hearings officer.
Mr. Chairman?
Melissa, it's true that you removed the power and the inconvenience and the expense, or I should say the inconvenience and expense, but you also removed the power and the responsibility from the county. One of the complaints about this part of the bill is that it puts into the hands of those who have the most to gain real power, and power that before belonged to it's late on Friday. Belonged to a public official, yes, mm-hmm. and someone who did not have a vested interest. Are you sensitive to that, and what's your response to that complaint?
Well, our response will be, first of all, the kind of power you're giving to this group is very limited power. The resources you're bringing to them, that they bring to the job, is the information and the experience of being farmers. One of the things that I reflected on after the last hearing is that planners in Oregon are trained as urban planners, not as rural planners. And we have planners who really do not understand farming and what goes on in the farm operations. This farmer panel would not do any legislative zoning work. They would not make the decision of where the EFU zone was. They would not make any zone changes. It would only be the kind of conditional use permits which would happen. They would be the kind of people who would know whether a small farm was a viable small farm and was it. They would have better skills, Ed Forgan believes, at understanding whether a small farmer who came in and said, I'm doing this kind of operation, I need a house, whether that really was a small farm operation or simply a residential request. And it's our feeling that this could be, this could bring some experience to the, some rural experience, some agricultural experience to that decision-making process that could work very effectively.
But I can see circumstances where it might very well be to the advantage of the three or five full-time commercial farm operators to not allow development of a parcel on the premise that somewhere down the road they would be able to take the land in themselves. You see that I see a real potential for a very direct conflict of interest here.
Hector, would you like to say?
Yes, I'd like to respond to that just a little bit. First, you realize that what we're doing is enforcing, trying to make what we already have in state law enforced, to get that actually going on out on the ground. And the problem we've got into is that you've got to compare that with the problem we've got right now, where the data that you've already been given shows that 90% of all the applications in the EFU zone are being approved, and that 1,000 friends has found that 81% of those were inappropriate. So we've got a situation out there now which is certainly not very desirable from the standpoint of enforcing the kinds of goal and law that the legislature has laid down. The farmer panel is so circumscribed by the kinds of criteria that we want to build into this thing that we think that they really are operating primarily in a judicial capacity, and they don't have to go back to the people out there for election. That really is what makes them unique, is that a hearings officer would be just as good, except it costs money. I think we would accept that. But unfortunately, we haven't been able to get that. And so we were suggesting something that was unpaid that we thought would be at least better than the system we've got now.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Dave?
I guess the thing I think that would trouble me is the fact that people get are elected to stand up and have to vote. We aren't excused from making our decisions in public, and they have to suffer the consequences of our votes. We have to stand on those. And it just seems to me, I was listening to this testimony so far, and I recall right in my own community here, we used to have planning commissions, and six of the seven were realtors. And we didn't like that very much. We wanted an unbiased approach to it. And it seems we're going right back to this. I must tell you, I think this is, there are many things that I'm concerned about, but this, pardon me, I just think it's awful, because it's bad law. And it's people who are elected to office have the responsibility. There's a foot of move. They'd love to have a hearings officer make all decisions so the elected officials wouldn't have to stand before their constituents. Well, it's about time they do stand before their constituents. And it's about time they answer for those things. And if they can't articulate what is right about land use planning, then they don't deserve to be in office. And that's the way I feel. I just tell you, that's the heart of the nubbin. And I don't think you can gloss over it or pretend. You bet. And there are some of them who go out and play the demagogic role instead of saying, look, land use is a statewide concern. There's a law that says we have to adhere to this. Now, we should administer this law fairly, evenly, and above board. But to hide behind some other group that somehow we're going to let's pretend, it won't work. It just simply won't work. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I'd like to have you move down further on that page also to lines 27 and 28. This is, I would say, if you were rating the two concepts from 1 to 10, this would have a, is 10 times more important than farm panels.
Could you direct me again, please?
Certainly, Senator Day. Page 8, okay. Lines 27 and 28.
Thank you.
This has to do with standing. We've been talking about the farm panel, now we're talking about standing. One of the problems that, again, we go back to this whole problem with enforcement, and we talk about elected officials standing on their record. One of the problems is that when election campaigns occur, most of the electorate is not aware of the kinds of decisions that the elected officials have made. And the elected officials are often under extremely high pressure to make decisions favorable to a particularly small group of people who may have pressured them. We are saying that one way that enforcement of land use laws could happen much more easily than it happens now, and at far less cost, both to the counties and to the state and to the private parties involved, would be if there would be a broader view of standing. And in relationship to actions in exclusive farm use zones, we are proposing that a party aggrieved by the final determination and any owner or farm operator of land in the county assess the true cash value for farm use may have the determination reviewed in the manner provided. This in sections 4 to 6, which refers to the LUBA statute, the standing to appear before LUBA. My family and also an organization with which I work in Benton County has been involved in a number of suits in relationship to agricultural decisions in Benton County. The time consumed in hearings before LUBA and hearings before the appeals court and hearings before the Supreme Court just on standing have been very, very costly. Recently, we won a case at LUBA. The county took us to the appeals court on the standing issue. We won at the appeals court. The county took us then from the appeals court to the Supreme Court on the standing issue, not in the substantive issue. And this becomes very expensive for Oregon taxpayers as we pay the appeals court and the Supreme Court expenses. It becomes very expensive for the groups or the individual who has to defend that kind of standing appeal. If LUBA did not have to hold hearings on standing, and if the appeals court and the Supreme Court did not have to hold hearings on standing, we believe that everybody would save money, and we do not believe that there would be that this would be used maliciously or mischievously. We think that the fee that anybody who appeals to a LUBA now has to pay of $250, in addition to that, the effort and the time involved in handling such an appeal is sufficient has sufficient serious impact that people simply will not take appeals maliciously unless they truly believe that Oregon law has been violated or the county plan has been violated. Would you like to say something further on that?
No.
Okay.
Any questions here?
We're on then to minor petitions, which are on page 9, and I just have to tell you that if Senator Hurd and a couple of other senators had voted for my Senate Bill 487 back in 10 years ago exactly, you wouldn't have this issue coming before you. That got defeated, that particular bill got defeated twice in the Senate floor, and we pulled it back to committee and took minor petitions out of it. Well, fortunately, since that time, almost all the counties of the state have put in minor petitioning ordinances. You realize that we have to have a minor petitioning ordinance if we're going to do what we want to do, which is stop the petitioning of EFU land for houses anywhere in the state. So this would add the language there on page 9, at line 10 and 11 there, that we have to, each county has to adopt a minor petitioning ordinance which would at least take care of that part of it which is in the EFU zone. It shouldn't be controversial at this point. Tillamook County is one county I know that doesn't have it, and I think there's still four or five in eastern Oregon that have not yet actually put this kind of an ordinance into being. I think all of the Willamette Valley counties already have. The other thing that we want to do with the old petitions, and our problem is that we've got to a lot of things that were done any length of time ago, way back to the Orchard subdivisions in Yamhill County, on through the Clean Orchard subdivisions in Benton County and Linn County, and all over the state, we have completely undeveloped subdivisions. And so we think that there ought to be something done about those to make them consolidate those things that are still in contiguous lots and with ownerships that are identical, so that we can really get this, since this is an exclusive farm use zone. We think that this makes it a much more workable thing, and they're not in these small lots that may be out there would then be treated as a unit. And of course we go on to our problem of dropping lot lines, which I'm sure that'll be somewhat controversial, because we think that anything that hangs out there for more than 3 years, we ought to drop the lot line so that that is considered as a, rather than a lot of record, becomes all part of one unit. And most of this, of course, would be farming units.
May I ask me?
Yes, sir. Yes.
What section are you referring to at the moment?
Section 13, page 10, lines 27 to 35.
That is all new language to the law.
I was still back looking.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I skipped rather rapidly from minor petitions on through the undeveloped subdivision section, 11 down now to 13.
In line 28, you have the 3 year specification. On line 31-32, consolidation to a single parcel, those contiguous parcels in which greater than possessory interests are held by the same person or persons. We have examples, for instance, in resource zones of someone coming to the county planning department asking for an application to build a residence on, let's say, a 20-acre parcel. And long after the fact, we learn that there is an adjacent 20-acre parcel that already has a residence on, owned by the same person, but they are being treated in many counties as two separate parcels. Marion County at the present time functions in this way, as if those contiguous lot lines, the lot lines where you have contiguous ownership, did not exist. Benton County used to function that way up until the end of 1980, and then it changed beginning of 81. We now look at them separately. And we're suggesting that the way Marion County now does that is a good way. It continues to protect farmland. In fact, I think there would be merit, you may want to look at that if you were looking at a broader bill as something which would be appropriate also in other resource zones such as forest zones. But this speaks only to farm zones.
I might point out that what actually goes on out there is that when I go in to pay my taxes, I have a sheaf of at least 10 separate tax lots. Linn County is one of those counties which does it about as bad as you can, because they take each one of these tax lots and assume that it's a planning lot as well. And for instance on that is that the neighbor adjoining me wanted to build a house on one of the two of his two tax lots, without regard to the fact that right across the road and all part of the same farm, and I would never know it was in two tax lots, but it was, so that he could argue that this one parcel was a separate planning lot from the rest of his farm, which happened to be right across the road. We think that things like this should be consolidated for planning purposes, and these would all be made a single, so we would drop those lot lines.
And we want to assure that, like in line 34 and 35, that consolidation does not preclude future applications to petition the consolidated parcels. One of the things that I hope everyone will remember is that we are not at all opposing farm partitions. That if a farmer has 100 acres or 200 acres or even 80 acres and needs for some reason to divide something for a legitimate farm use, that is certainly appropriate. And certainly we believe county planning officials can make the proper decisions on that.
The last provision there says this has nothing to do with lot lines that are established for property taxation. So we're not affecting those whatsoever. It's only for planning purposes. Maybe I better back up just a little bit and tell you what a subdivision is and what a minor partition is. And I probably should have done this sooner, but a subdivision is four or more, the cutting of four or more. So if you have three or fewer, you're into the minor partitioning section. You have a major partition if a road's involved, but a minor partition is three cuts. And you can do this every year, as I understand it, according to state law. So we have this. This is part of law. We're simply saying that the county should look at this kind of thing, and that certainly as a part of this whole process of looking at it, we think that lot lines that are no longer function for planning purposes ought to be reduced.
I would just like to say that if at any time there's more information that any of you need or that you'd like to have from us, we will certainly do whatever we can to provide that information for you and hope you will feel free to ask for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas Murray.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Thomas Murray. I'm a resident of Portland and an owner of rural property in Western Oregon. I consider myself an aggrieved owner, which I believe allows me to testify here today on this committee's limitation of testimony on the issue of standing. I would like to go on record of opposing Senate Bill 237 in its entirety. There are ringers in this bill, and a ringer means one that enters a competition under false pretenses. The definition of marginal lands is arbitrary and capricious. The bill sponsored by the group Oregon for Agriculture is obviously self-interest legislation, which if enacted would give greater state control over private property and people. The bill should be killed in committee without any further consideration, in my judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for Mr. Murray? Thank you, sir. Pat Clock and Kim Clock?
My name is Pat Clock. I guess I would start kind of with a couple of questions because I'm not certain, but what is the definition of a full-time commercial farm operator? Is there a definition for?
Well, I think the currently it's done on, there's an income test.
On a full-time commercial farm operator?
Well, the definition of the definition of farming, commercial farming, I believe, is used to decide who gets the farm deferral. And currently, there's a test, an income test. You have to produce a certain amount of.
Well, on exclusive farm use right now, there is not an income test.
The bill proposes
sort of people that would qualify would people who do meet the new minimum income. Is that written in anywhere where this definition is? Is that
in 237? It's on page 6, I believe. Is that right? 4 through 9.
On number 6, where is that?
Page 6, and lines 4 through 9. Is that right?
I'm not sure. It's not really explicit.
Yeah. Dick, you want to come? Can you? I'm not quite sure I understand that.
I think Mr. Clock is asking about the language that would require the establishment of a farmer's panel.
That's correct.
And it says each governing body, this is on page 8, line 14.
Here.
Each county governing body shall appoint a panel of 3 or 5 full-time commercial farm operators. I don't believe
there is a definition.
There isn't a definition.
I just thought you were talking about the other section.
How about qualified farm operators?
I don't believe there's a... Well, presumably the qualified farm operator would mean a full-time commercial farmer.
So part of that sentence could be collapsed. So that, right now, the way it looks like it reads that you would have a... they would select 5 full-time commercial farm operators out of a list of qualified farm operators, which may or may not include full-time commercial farm operators. Is that right? But right now you're saying probably they're one and the same.
Yeah, that's the way I would read it, yes. And you're absolutely right. I do not believe there is a definition for...
Who would define that?
That's a very good point. Very good question.
I had one other question. This is regards to definition, I guess. And I was down here 2 weeks ago. I didn't get testified. This does go back just a little bit.
That's
all right. I also have a question is, with the definition of substantial compliance. It says, means a comprehensive plan or land use. This is on page 3. Substantial compliance means the comprehensive plan or land use regulation or plan or land use regulation amendment complies with the goals and all material and substantial particulars.